later. I would have Lawyer Daggett skin Rooster Cogburn and nail his verminous hide to the wall. The important thing was not to lose sight of my object, and that was to get Tom Chaney. I took supper and then set about getting my things together. I had Mrs. Floyd prepare some bacon and biscuits and make little sandwiches of them. But not so little as all that, as one of her biscuits would have made two of Mama's. Very flat, though, she skimped on baking powder. I also bought a small wedge of cheese from her and some dried peaches. These things I secured in a sack. Mrs. Floyd was alive with curiosity, and I told her I was going over into the territory with some marshals to look at a man they had arrested. This did not satisfy her by any means, but I pleaded ignorance of details. I told her I would likely be gone for several days, and if my mother or Lawyer Daggett made inquiries, a certainty, she was to reassure them as to my safety. I rolled up the blankets with the sack of food inside, and then wrapped the slicker around the roll and made it fast with some twine. I put Papa's heavy coat on, over my own coat. I had to turn the cuffs back. My little hat was not as thick and warm as his, so I traded. Of course, it was too big, and I had to fold up some pages from the New Era and stick them inside the band to make for a snug fit. I took my bundle and my gun sack and left for the stock barn. Stonehill was just leaving when I got there. He was singing the hymn Beulah Land to himself in a low bass voice. It is one of my favorites. He stopped singing when he saw me. "It is you again," said he. "Is there some complaint about the pony?" "No, I am very happy with him," said I. "Little Blackie is my chum." "A satisfied customer gladdens the heart." "I believe you have picked up some since last I saw you." "Yes, I am a little better. Richard's himself again, or will be ere the week is out. Are you leaving us?"
"I am getting an early start tomorrow, and I thought I would stay the balance of the night in your barn. I don't see why I should pay Mrs. Floyd a full rate for only a few hours' sleep."
"Why, indeed?"
He took me inside the barn and told the watchman it would be all right for me to stay the night on the office bunk. The watchman was an old man. He helped me to shake out the dusty quilt that was on the bunk. I looked in on little Blackie at his stall and made sure everything was in readiness. The watchman followed me around. I said to him, "Are you the one that had his teeth knocked out?"
"No, that was Tim. Mine was drawn by a dentist. He called himself a dentist."
"Who are you?"
"Toby."
"I want you to do something."
"What are you up to?"
"I am not free to discuss it. Here is a dime for you. At 2 hours before sunup, I want you to feed this pony. Give him a double handful of oats and about the same amount of corn, but no more, along with a little hay. See that he has sufficient water. At 1 hour before sunup, I want you to wake me up. When you have done that, put this saddle and this bridle on the pony. Have you got it all straight?"
"I am not simple. I am just old. I've handled horses for 50 years.
"Then you should do a good job. Do you have any business in the office tonight?"
"I cannot think of any."
"If you do have, take care of it now."
"There's nothing I need in there."
"That's fine. I'll close the door, and I do not want a lot of coming and going while I'm trying to sleep." I slept well enough wrapped in the quilt. The fire in the office stove had been banked, but the little room was not so cold as to be very uncomfortable. The watchman Toby was true to his word, and he woke me up in the chill darkness before dawn. I was up and buttoning my boots in a moment. While Toby saddled the horse, I washed myself, using some of his hot coffee water to take the sting out of a bucket of cold water. It came to me that I should have left one of the bacon sandwiches out of the bundle for breakfast, but you can never think of everything. I did not want to open it up now.
Toby gave me a portion of his grits that he had warmed up. "Do you not have any butter to put on it?" I asked him.
"No," said he, and I had to eat it plain.
I tied my roll behind the saddle, as I had seen Papa do, and I made doubly sure it was secure. I could see no good place to carry the pistol. I wanted the piece ready at hand, but the belt was too big around for my waist, and the pistol itself was far too big and heavy to stick in the waist of my jeans. I finally tied the neck of the gun sack to the saddle horn with a good knot about the size of a turkey egg. I led little Blackie from his stall and mounted him. He was a little nervous and jumpy, but he did not pitch. Toby tightened the girth again after I was aboard. He said,
"Have you got everything?"
"Yes, I believe I am ready. Open the door, Toby, and wish me luck. I am off for the Choctaw Nation." It was still dark outside and bitter cold, although mercifully there was little wind. Why is it calm in the early morning? You will notice that lakes are usually still and smooth before daybreak. The frozen, rutted mud of the streets made uncertain going for little Blackie in his new shoes. He snorted and snapped his head from time to time, as though to look at me. I talked to him, saying silly things. Only 4 or 5 people were to be seen as I rode down Garrison Avenue, and they scurrying from one warm place to another. I could see lamps coming on through windows as the good people of Fort Smith began to stir for the new day. When I reached the ferry slip on the river, I dismounted and waited. I had to move and dance about to keep from getting stiff. I removed the paper wadding from inside the hat band and pulled the hat down over my ears. I had no gloves, and I rolled Papa's coat sleeves down so that my hands might be covered. There were 2 men running the ferry. When it reached my side and discharged a horseman, one of the ferrymen hailed me.
"Are you going across?" said he.
"I'm waiting for someone," said I. "What is the fare?"
10 cents for a horse and rider."
"Have you seen Marshal Cogburn this morning?"
"Is that Rooster Cogburn?"
"That is the man."
"We've not seen him."
There were few passengers at that hour, but as soon as 1 or 2 turned up, the ferry would depart. It seemed to have no schedule, except as business demanded, but then the crossing was not a long one. As gray dawn came, I could make out chunks of ice bobbing along, out in the current of the river. The boat made at least 2 circuits before Rooster and LaBeef appeared and came riding down the incline to the slip. I had begun to worry that I might have missed them. Rooster was mounted on a big bay stallion that stood at about 16 hands, and LaBeef on a shaggy cowpony not much bigger than mine. Well, they were a sight to see with all their arms. They were both wearing their belt guns around their outside coats, and LaBeef cut a splendid figure with his white-handled pistols and Mexican spurs. Rooster was wearing a deerskin jacket over his black suit coat. He carried only 1 revolver on his belt, an ordinary-looking piece with grips of cedar or some reddish wood. On the other side, the right side, he wore a dirk knife. His gun belt was not fancy like LaBeef's, but only a plain and narrow belt with no cartridge loops. He carried his cartridges in a sack in his pocket. But he also had 2 more revolvers in saddle scabbards at his thighs. They were big pistols, like mine. The 2 officers also packed saddle guns, Rooster a Winchester repeating rifle, and LaBeef a gun called a Sharps rifle, a kind I had never seen. My thought was this: Cheney, look out. They dismounted and led their horses aboard the ferry in a clatter, and I followed at a short distance. I said nothing. I was not trying to hide, but neither did I do anything to call attention to myself. It was a minute or so before Rooster recognized me.
"Sure enough, we've got company," said he. Lebeef was very angry.
"Can you not get anything through your head?" he said to me. "Get off this boat. Did you suppose you were going with us?"
I replied, "This ferry is open to the public. I have paid my fare."
Lebeef reached in his pocket and brought out a gold dollar. He handed it to one of the ferrymen and said,
"Slam, take this girl to town and present her to the sheriff. She is a runaway. Her people are worried nearly to death about her. There's a $50 reward for her return."
"That is a story," said I.
"Let us ask the marshal," said Lebeef. "What about it, marshal?"
Rooster said, "Yes, you'd best take her away. She is a runaway, all right. Her name is Ross, and she came up from Yale County. The sheriff has a notice on her."
"They are in this story together," said I. "I have business across the river, and if you interfere with me, Slim, you may find yourself in court where you don't want to be. I have a good lawyer."
But the tall river rat would pay no heed to my protests. He led my pony back onto the slip, and the boat pulled away without me. I said,
"I'm not going to walk up the hill."
I mounted Little Blackie, and the river rat led us up the hill. When we reached the top, I said,
"Wait, stop a minute."
He said, "What is it?"
I said, "There's something wrong with my hat."
He stopped and turned around.
"Your hat," said he.
I took it off and slapped him in the face with it 2 or 3 times and made him drop the reins. I recovered them and wheeled Little Blackie about and rode him down the bank for all he was worth. I had no spurs or switch, but I used my hat on his flank to good effect.
About 50 yards below the ferry slip, the river narrowed, and I aimed for the place, going like blazes across a sandbar. I popped Blackie all the way with my hat, as I was afraid he might shy at the water, and I did not want to give him a chance to think about it. We hit the river running, and Blackie snorted and arched his back against the icy water, but once he was in, he swam as though he was raised to it. I drew up my legs behind me and held to the saddle horn and gave Blackie his head with loose reins. I was considerably splashed. The crossing was badly chosen, because the narrow place of a river is the deepest, and it is there that the current is swiftest and the bank steepest, but these things did not occur to me at the time. Shortest looked best. We came out some little ways down the river, and, as I say, the bank was steep, and Blackie had some trouble climbing it. When we were up and free, I reined in, and Little Blackie gave himself a good shaking. Rooster and Lebeef and the ferryman were looking at us from the boat. We had beaten them across. I stayed where I was. When they got off the boat, Lebeef hailed me, saying,
"Go back, I say."
I made no reply. He and Rooster had a parley.
Their game soon became clear. They mounted quickly and rode off at a gallop with the idea of leaving me. What a foolish plan, pitting horses so heavily loaded with men and hardware against a pony so lightly burdened as Blackie. Our course was northwesterly on the Fort Gibson Road, if you could call it a road. This was the Cherokee Nation. Little Blackie had a hard gait, a painful trot, and I made him speed up and slow down until he had achieved a pace, a kind of lope, that was not so jarring. He was a fine, spirited pony. He enjoyed this outing, you could tell. We rode that way for 2 miles or more, Blackie and I hanging back from the officers at about 100 yards. Rooster and Lebeef at last saw they were making no gain, and they slowed their horses to a walk. I did the same. After a mile or so of this, they stopped and dismounted. I stopped too, keeping my distance, and remained in the saddle. Lebeef shouted,
"Come here. We'll have a conversation with you."
"You can talk from there," I replied. "What is it you have to say?"
The two officers had another parley. Then Lebeef shouted to me again, saying,
"If you do not go back now, I am going to whip you."
I made no reply.
Lebeef picked up a rock
and threw it in my direction. It fell short by about 50 yards. I said,
"That is the most foolish thing that ever I saw."
LaBeef said,
"Is that what you will have, a whipping?"
I said,
"You are not going to whip anybody."
They talked some more between themselves, but could not seem to settle on anything. And, after a time, they rode off again, this time at a comfortable lope. Few travelers were on the road, only an Indian now and then on a horse or a mule, or a family in a spring wagon. I will own I was somewhat afraid of them, although they were not, as you may imagine, wild Comanches with painted faces and outlandish garb, but rather civilized Creeks and Cherokees and Choctaws from Mississippi and Alabama, who had owned slaves and fought for the Confederacy and wore store clothes. Neither were they sullen and grave. I thought them on the cheerful side as they nodded and spoke greetings. From time to time, I would lose sight of Rooster and LaBeef as they went over a rise or around a bend of trees, but only briefly. I had no fears that they could escape me. Now, I will say something about the land. Some people think the present state of Oklahoma is all treeless plains. They are wrong. The eastern part, where we were traveling, is hilly and fairly well timbered, with post oak and blackjack and similar hard scrub. A little farther south, there is a good deal of pine as well. But right along in here at this time of year, the only touches of green to be seen were cedar brakes and solitary holly trees, and a few big cypresses down in the bottoms. Still, there were open places, little meadows and prairies, and from the tops of those low hills, you could usually see a good long distance. Then this happened. I was riding along wool gathering instead of keeping alert, and as I came over a rise, I discovered the road below me deserted. I nudged the willing Blackie with my heels. The two officers could not be far ahead. I knew they were up to some stunt. At the bottom of the hill, there was a stand of trees and a shallow creek. I was not looking for them there at all. I thought they had raced on ahead. Just as Blackie was splashing across the creek, Rooster and LaBeef sprang from the brush on their horses. They were right in my path. Little Blackie reared, and I was almost thrown. LaBeef was off his horse before you could say Jack Robinson, and at my side. He pulled me from the saddle and threw me to the ground, face down. He twisted one of my arms behind me and put his knee in my back. I kicked and struggled, but the big Texan was too much for me. "Now we will see what tune you sang," said he. He snapped a limb off a willow bush and commenced to push one of my trouser legs above my boot. I kicked violently so that he could not manage the trouser leg. Rooster remained on his horse. He sat up there in the saddle and rolled a cigarette and watched. The more I kicked, the harder LaBeef pressed down with his knee, and I soon saw the game was up. I left off struggling. LaBeef gave me a couple of sharp licks with the switch. He said, "I am going to stripe your leg good." "See what good it does you," said I. I began to cry. I could not help it, but more from anger and embarrassment than pain. I said to Rooster, "Are you going to let him do this?" He dropped his cigarette to the ground and said, "No, I don't believe I will. Put your switch away, LaBeef. She has got the best of us."
"She has not got the best of me," replied the ranger.
Rooster said, "That will do," I said. LaBeef paid him no heed. Rooster raised his voice and said, "Put that switch down, LaBeef. Do you hear me talking to you?" LaBeef stopped and looked at him. Then he said, "I am going ahead with what I started." Rooster pulled his cedar-handled revolver and cocked it with his thumb and threw down on LaBeef. He said, "It will be the biggest mistake you ever made, you Texas brush popper." LaBeef flung the switch away in disgust and stood up. He said,
"You have taken her part in this all along, Cogburn. Well, you're not doing her any kindness here. Do you think you are doing the right thing? I can tell you, you are doing the wrong thing."
Rooster said,
"That will do. Get on your horse."
I brushed the dirt from my clothes and washed my hands and face in the cold creek water. Little Blackie was getting himself a drink from the stream. I said, Listen here, I have thought of something. This stunt that you two pulled has given me an idea. When we locate